Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. It's the 15th of August. The sun is rising and the Son of God is risen. It's the central good news. If you listen to our show, that you know we start with each morning. It's the heart of the gospel. Sin is forgiven. Death is beaten. It's true again this morning. And so whatever the headlines bring and the difficulties of life that can be so very real, there's always hope and always future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. I'm your host for Faith Radio Mornings, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Logan Rausch, who at the end of last hour, you heard Logan chime in a bit about the idea that he might be running for office. And so Logan, and I know you're planning your campaign during the second hour of the show.
That's a terrible idea. That's just a bad idea.
If you've got the free ice cream platform, I'm in. And, of course, we've got Paul Perreault in the newsroom just bringing us this flow of news each morning and different topics of the day. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. No, I'm not running for office.
Oh, it's probably a good thing that none of us in studio are currently running for office, including Bill English, who's in studio with us. He joins us each Wednesday morning to talk Bible and business. And, Bill, I love having you in. I, at the top of the first hour, brought in a quote from a theologian, Julian of Norwich. She was in the 14th century. And she was ministering during a time of the plague. And just, you want to talk about difficulties in life, right? And what was true even back then for her, the things that we talk about on Faith Radio Mornings, was that there was a kingdom that has no end. And so instead of hiding in her hut every day and being worried about catching the plague, she came out into these villages of the English countryside. And village by village she went and she proclaimed, all will be well and all will be well and all manner of things shall be well. And that you need to be anchored in something different if you can make that declaration in the midst of just this bleak plague.
Yeah, if you can't rely on God in the deepest, darkest times, then what's the point?
Yeah, it's right. Absolutely. It is the great hope of the gospel. And the quote that I had for this morning, I would love your take on it too, is she says, you know, if there's anywhere on earth a lover of God who is always kept safe, well, I don't know anything about that. But what I know is that in the rising and the falling and the rising again, we are always kept in the same precious love of God.
Isn't it something that John 10:29, no one can take us out of his hand, and he always has, this is the Bill English paraphrase, our back.
Yeah.
Right? God is there to, not solely there to sustain us. We're here to worship him. It really is about God. But God comes down and he takes care of us and he provides for us. Kathy and I have seen this time and again over the last 6 to 7 years. We've been through some pretty dark and bleak days from a financial perspective. And God has always provided what we needed from the most unusual of sources. And, you know, that verse at the end of Philippians, I will always provide for your needs, is very, very true.
Yeah, it's an important reminder of just the, sort of the hope. And I know Hallie and I share the same sort of story of just in times of darkness and bleakness, there is always this sense of this hand that holds us. Even if the circumstances don't change, we are in the hand. There's always future in those moments. So,
you know, and isn't it great to know in a John 14 sense that God will, you know, he literally will come to us and make his home with us, his presence with us, God with us, Emmanuel. What a wonderful thing.
What a wonderful thing.
You know, I was telling a friend yesterday, I said, I could lose my house and go bankrupt and everything. I'm still the richest man in the world because I have the Lord. I have a beautiful, wonderful wife and two wonderful kids. And I'm the richest man in the world.
That's beautifully said, Bill. We love having you on here each Wednesday to talk about things related to Bible and business. I know in just a minute after the break, we'll talk a bit about what it means to maybe start a business. Even mm-hmm. late in life, there's still opportunity. You know, there's even hope in future regardless of the age. And so if you want to join the conversation, we would love to have you at 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. You can call in. You can text in your questions or thoughts for Bill as we get into the topic of starting a business at a late age next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and joined in studio each week like this by Bill English to talk about things related to the Bible and business. And Bill, I know we were chatting, obviously, before this break, just about a number of things and quotes of ancient theologians and the truth that's there. You actually have 68 or maybe 69 undeniable truths. It depends on the day
depends
on your website,
on the day,
right?
Yeah.
Relative to walking out life in business. And I'm just reading truth number 35. We've talked about maybe 11 or 12 of these on the show in the past. But this one says, ignoring problems leaves a lot of success on the table. Talk us through what you mean by that.
Very simple. A problem is usually a drag on the profitability of the company in one way or another. You ignore it, you leave a lot of success or profitability on the table.
Yeah, it's a great tip. Number 41 says, you must have an inner passion for the core value your business offers to your customers. Talk about that. You can kind of tell, can't you, when people really believe in what they're doing?
Yeah, you do. And so you'll meet people who just have an incredible passion for widgets or exploding widgets or exploding elephants. By the way, go out and look up exploding elephants on Google.
That's a thing.
It's one of the funniest videos you'll ever see. But you have to have a core passion for what your business does. What's the core value that your business offers to the customer? If you don't have a passion for that, you're not going to be able to fake it for very long.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. What do you suggest for people that maybe are employees of a business where they've got to make some income, they're trying to provide for their family, and yet they don't really have a passion for the core values of their business?
Yeah, but they can still have a core value for what they do. So they may not have a core value for exploding widgets, but they may have a core value for doing accounting or doing human resources or being a production line manager or something like that. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, there are things within their job that you need a core value or a passion for.
So there's ways to hold the tension, in other words, that you might have a core passion for something that can sustain you, even if you find yourself, well, I don't really care too much about the values of the business. You can still move forward with integrity.
I think so. I think you'll do better being in a business where you have a passion for the core value of the business.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that, you can still have a passion for what you do.
What do you recommend for people who may be out on the job search these days and they're in the interview process and they maybe are asking this kind of question, trying to figure out, gosh, am I really going to be a good fit here? Am I really going to align myself with this place? Because sometimes you get involved in a job and then you're 3 or 4 weeks in, right? And you think, whoa, I just said yes to something and I'm not sure that I am in alignment here. What do you suggest for people that might find themselves in that circumstance? I'm sure a lot of our listeners have experienced that.
Yeah, they have probably. Look, pay attention to two things. One is the chemistry. During the interview process, imagine yourself having to go in and do a one-on-one with that person, with the hiring manager, and decide if you think you could do that with them and if you could be straight and honest with them. Number two, make sure that God is leading you to that job and that business. So you need to be praying it through. Is God really leading me here? Do I have God's, not just tacit approval, but God's leading? And pay attention to those two things.
Yeah, it's really important to get to the heart of that, right? Because I think we can let other values and ideas drive it, and sort of almost subtly so. It's like if we need a job or we think we can advance the career, we can self-justify pretty quickly taking a job or a situation where maybe God is saying, hang on just a minute on this one.
Yeah, and it's tough if you really need the money.
Right.
I mean, that can be really tough. So you may want to get a series of part-time jobs to make up the difference until you really find what you're after. Look, unemployment in Minnesota, anyways, I know we're simulcast in 10 different markets here, but
right.
Unemployment in Minnesota is below 3%. So
that's amazing.
If you want a job, you can find a job, and you can find one today.
Yeah.
It's not hard. So, if you're not finding exactly what you want, maybe you take some part-time-ish things until you really do find what you want.
That's Bill English, BibleandBusiness.com. He writes a lot on just bringing our faith together with business, joins us each week. If you want to join the conversation or have a question for Bill, you can call us or text into the studio at 877-93-FAITH. Love to interact with you on any of these topics related to work and job and being a Christian person in the business realm. And Bill, I know we started planning this week, last week, when we were talking about the subject of starting a business. Mm-hmm. And when I think about starting a business, I think about how many people do this at a younger age. I think there's this sense in which you can absorb the risk a little bit. If the business fails, you've got a wider financial horizon ahead of you of time to recover if things don't go well. I know I was surprised myself to find myself sort of entering into the early stages of starting a business some 14 years ago. And at 34 at that time, it felt like, well, if this doesn't work, yeah, there's still plenty of opportunities out there. But there's even the opportunity, it doesn't matter how old you are in life, you really can still become an entrepreneur on some level. So talk us through what sort of the challenges are, but the invitations and opportunities are, if say maybe at 45 or 55 or 65, can you still think about starting a business?
You can, but it's different when you're 65 than when you're 45, because you don't have that time horizon that most entrepreneurs need to start something, get it to critical mass, kind of ride it for a while, enjoy it, and then get it ready for sale and sell the business. So you don't have the same time horizon. So you have some constraints that you need to look at when you're older that maybe you wouldn't look at as much when you're 35 or 45 when you're younger. What are some of those constraints? Well, one of them is just the amount of time it takes to really get the business up and running. If this is a five-year glide path and you're already 70, it may not be the right business for you. If there's large financial investment to get the business going, maybe you need to buy some equipment if it's a manufacturing business or something like that. You don't want to spend all of your life savings at age 70 trying to do something like that. So there are some constraints that you need to take a look at.
Yeah, and in terms of what are maybe the most important factors, can you evaluate the marketplace effectively as one of the most important factors to say the success of this is at least reasonable? How do you judge on the front end when it's kind of crystal ballish, right? And you take your best shot at it, but what are some of the markers you look for to say this has the best chance for success?
Honestly, if you're doing this past the age of even 50,
yeah.
Last week our conversation was about over 65, right? But but even if you're over 50, I think the first thing you need to do is to go to the Lord and say, "Is this what I should be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Are you leading me to start a business?" If you don't have confirmation from the Lord, it's going to be tough to do anything else. Of course, that's true of all of life, right? The other thing is, I have a whole blog post out at Bible and Business on assuming risk. What does the Bible have to say about Christians assuming risk? And I would invite anybody who's thinking about starting a business in their later years to read through that article to make sure that they understand the biblical implications for assuming risk. And then finally, you really need to know that you can be successful. You need more certainty when you're older starting a business than you do when you're younger. When you're younger, if it fails, you have time, in theory, to recover from that. When you're older, you don't have time to recover. So if you have a failing business, you started at age 68, fails at 71, you know, you don't have a lot of years to recover from that failure, especially if it wipes out all your savings and stuff. So you have to be very, very careful.
Yeah, Bill, before the break, one more question on this is it helpful to get the advice of certain people to just take a look at what your thoughts are? Because I think so many people think, I've got this great thought, but boy, getting other eyes on this, do you suggest going to banks to get their eyes on it, to trusted friends? Who do you suggest taking some advice from if you're thinking about doing a business opportunity?
You know, in my email to you guys with my notes for today at the bottom, I said, just remember something, and one of them is some babies are ugly. Okay.
For sure.
And what do I mean by that? Because usually the phrase is there's no ugly babies.
Right.
What we mean by that is some businesses just should not be done. And if you're the business owner and the entrepreneur, you're never going to see that because you're so excited about it. So you do need people speaking into your life who can give you direct, honest feedback that you will listen to, and they may tell you that you have an ugly baby.
Yeah, well, I'll never forget a pastoral friend of mine that he was one of our mentors, and he would say when he would often go to the hospital rooms or greet young families with the baby, he would simply just say this, "Now that's a baby." And, you know, of course, people take that as, of course, I mean, it's the archetype of being a baby, but he was just making a neutral statement as a great way of getting out of the situation.
Well, you don't walk in and say, "Boy, that's an ugly baby."
Yeah, no,
you don't do that.
Never a good approach.
No.
Well, Bill, I love having you here. We're going to take a short break. We actually have a question from Sally from Edina, who is going to talk a little bit about the use of credit cards coming up next and how to best use those effectively and efficiently as a steward. So much more to come with Bill English here on Faith Radio Mornings. It is 21 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and joined in studio by Bill English at BibleandBusiness.com. Got a great question, Bill, here during the first segment of Sally from Edina. And again, if you want to join the conversation, have a question, just text us or call us at 877-93-FAITH. And Sally asked Bill this question. A few weeks ago, you talked about credit card points, Bill. My husband and I pay off our credit card debt every month and enjoy the benefits of the points. Money experts say credit card debt is not something that we should really get into, but I see it sort of as a tool that can be used effectively if we pay it off each month. How have I been diluted is the question.
No, she hasn't been diluted as long as she pays it off every month. I don't have a problem with people using credit cards. This is a plastic society, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
So, no, there's not a problem there.
Well, and I would think that the use of those points really gets diluted quite a bit if we end up having to pay the interest. And so the point, I mean, with interest rates at anywhere between 13 to 18% on credit cards, it racks up pretty quickly if you don't pay them off.
Yeah, and so two things. You don't want to use a card and put debt on it just so you can get the points. Number two, you don't buy something just so you can get the points. Okay,
yeah.
That's frivolous spending. But I have a gal in my office. They go on vacation every year because they do everything on credit cards with points, and they pay it off every month. And they go to Hawaii, Alaska, other places, all for free, all five of them. She's got three kids, husband, and, you know, they airfare, hotel, everything's free.
Yeah. Do you suggest shopping around for a use of credit card as to what has maybe the best value in its use if you are going to pay it off every month? I know some people like the cash back kind of ideas. I know some people like points. Do you suggest shopping around a bit on this?
I prefer cash back because it's cash.
Yeah.
And I can spend it anywhere. Points I usually have to spend at certain places, and I may or may not be able or want to spend at those places. Don't shop around too much. Get your credit card, settle down. People who do FICO score see you going from credit card too often, that actually lowers your credit score.
Yeah, and I think speaking of credit cards, it's such an important and credit score. What do you suggest for people as they're engaged in the use of credit? What are maybe like the one or two things that you just say you have to do this in order to keep your credit score up?
Try to pay your balances off and try not to keep balances on there long term. That would be the two things. It's all about the ratio of three things: your income, how much available credit you have, and how much debt you have. And the more that you have lower debt, more available credit, and higher income, your credit scores are going to be quite high.
Yeah, and when you pay it off each month like that, it's not actually really debt
debt.
Right? I mean, it's sort of just a temporary advance that you know you're going to pay off. Do you recommend having savings in your account to cover that for sure, so you're not maybe projecting out and saying, well, I know I'm going to get paid in 2 weeks, and so that'll pay it off, because you don't necessarily know what's going to happen in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you don't, but debt is always presuming on the future.
Yeah.
But if the future is 2 weeks, I'm not as concerned about that as if it's 20 years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, in terms of getting back to just the conversation we were having around maybe financial responsibility and what to do with retirement, I know we've got a caller on the line, Terry from Madison, that has a question. He's close to retirement and would like to ask you.
Sure.
Morning, Terry. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. What question do you have for Bill this morning?
I'm just wondering if with my Social Security and all my bills paid, doing ventriloquism, I seem to be building a base, and I am wondering whether or not would it be feasible to quit my full-time job and continue to build a base for my ventriloquism.
I wish I had the skill of ventriloquism, Bill. But
I thought you did.
Well, I've been practicing.
This isn't always you here.
No,
is
yeah,
it?
It's, no. I am. I'm actually broadcasting from China right now. Yeah. And it's a great question. I mean, somebody that has an interesting, usable niche skill. I mean, what do you recommend on any of these levels? Do you try to build it while you're still in your career, or do you just kind of cut bait and move forward?
Yeah, at some point, if you want to go full-time on it, Terry, you're going to have to quit your full-time job and go full-time into ventriloquism. I don't even know how to say that.
Yeah.
Look, the risk there is the loss of income for a period of time. So you have to look at your glide path of how fast is the service business ramping up. And what do you make? And at what point would you hit the same income of your full-time job? And are you working 80 hours a week to get that instead of 40? Are you working 60 instead of 40? Are you working 40 instead of 40? And how long can you sustain that? And so you just have to kind of look at the basic factors and see. I don't know when to tell you to cut bait and go full-time, or if you should ever do that. You have to just decide and see if there's enough full-time ventriloquistic work to really make a full-time living at that.
Yeah, I love the question. Do you suggest that somebody really could, as long as it's feasible in a work week, say, hey, I'm going to give this 6 months. I know I'm going to be working out of my mind on both of these jobs, but I really want to take a shot at that. Is that sustainable for somebody? Can they give themselves to do two different occupations?
Yeah, they can. Sure, they can. I mean, people work 70, 80 hours a week all the time, right? So, yeah, that can happen.
Yeah. So for a young person maybe listening and thinking about, hey, I'm going to start a business, how is it different for somebody at 23, 24? I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs that want to just get started this way. As we kind of wrap up our time together, what do you recommend to them if they're going to get started?
A, have a business plan. B, you need fund. You'll probably need funding for your business, so you have to make sure that your good idea isn't all that you have. You have to find some funding for your business, and you need to be able to build alliances with people, vendors, employees, that kind of thing. And then you need to have the character not to screw the whole thing up.
Mm. Well, I love your tips and advice, Bill, coming on each week like this. It's so helpful for our listeners. If they want to find some of your writings, remind us again where they can find you.
At BibleAndBusiness.com.
Love it. Have a great rest of your morning. We'll take a break for Breakpoint and come back for the second half of our second hour and talk about what happens when we get hurt by our churches. You know, we do a lot of serious news here on Faith Radio Mornings, and justifiably so, but Bill English still in studio from our last segment, and you had referenced exploding elephants, but it was actually exploding whales that we're talking about. Give our listeners just a little sense of this clip.
So there's from the 70s, there's a news clip, it's a true story, whale beaches itself outside of Oregon, and the guys, in order to try to get rid of the whale, they end up exploding it with dynamite, and people came out to watch this thing, and they thought it was the most wonderful thing and still blubber until blubber started to rain down on them. And then you hear these people in the background, get out of here, run, get away. It's one of the funniest videos. Look up exploding whales.
I love it, Bill. You just can't find that news anywhere else. Let's get to the actual news here at the bottom of the hour on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we had a great conversation with Pastor Steve Weens, who was talking about the dark places in our lives and this ongoing cycle of birth and death and resurrection.
The universal pattern in the world is this birth, death, and resurrection. All over the scriptures, we see that pattern as the life cycle of a community of people that happens over and over again. So, for example, the major movement of the children of Israel is out of Egypt, so out of slavery, out of addiction, into the wilderness. And because there's no direct flight from Egypt to the promised land, you actually have to go through a kind of death in the wilderness. And this is when maybe you've lost a job, your spouse has died, everything changes. And so on the way from Egypt, you're going to go through wilderness, and this is not easy. This is where all your answers go away, all your certainty goes away. We are tempted to resist the wilderness because we don't like being uncertain. But when we do that, we just go back. We actually go back to Egypt, back to addiction. It might look differently unless we move all the way through that story, Egypt, wilderness, promised land, or birth, death, resurrection. We won't grow and become who we were meant to become.
I was just riveted to what Steve had to say yesterday, and I know it's on our website. Logan, what would be the best way for people to maybe find this if they want to catch the entire segment with Pastor Weens?
Visit myfaithradio.com and click on Faith Radio Mornings, or you can search Steve Weens, The Megachurch Dilemma.
Well, up next we have Dr. Diane Langberg coming on the program to talk a bit about how to handle it when we are hurt or maybe even abused by our church. So stay with us for more on Faith Radio Mornings.
Every mother or father wants their child to do well in life, and teens benefit from a healthy push once in a while. But I'd caution you against pushing for perfection. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. The focus with your teen should not be about success or failure in their activities. Instead, it's about continuing to love your child through his difficulties. What does that really look like? First, make sure your child knows that he's valued no matter what he does. Second, make a habit of starting conversations with your child that have nothing to do with their performance. Ask questions about how she feels or what he's facing. You'll broaden the base of your conversations and reinforce that you love your teen.
There's more from Mark Gregston on the Parenting Today's Teens website. Go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
It's about 20 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined in the show at this time by Dr. Diane Langberg, who is a practicing psychologist, has at least 40 years of working with trauma survivors and clergy, and with so many of the troubling headlines coming out of Willow Creek, as well as some of the abuse going on within the Catholic Church. There's just a lot to get to that can be difficult, especially when our places of worship become those places where we get wounded. So, Diane, thanks for coming on the program to help us, as people following Jesus, know what to do when we get in these situations.
You're welcome. It's a privilege to be here.
So I know that you write a bit about some of the power dynamics that can happen within church organizations, especially in our culture today. So kind of talk us through just sort of even sort of the alluring temptations that people in power may find themselves in some of these big church environments.
Well, the alluring nature of it is that it makes us feel good. And it makes us feel worthy, and we often then buy the lies of power, that we become the person that is necessary for everybody else. The other important thing about it is that we need to understand that power simply means the ability to make something happen. So everybody has it. I mean, a screaming newborn in the middle of the night has the power to wake up two sleeping adults. So it's part of being human. But there are situations, such as leadership, that make it more and more. And so we have more and more people that we have power over, and it's very easy for that to begin to be something that we feed off of.
And the church sometimes can have an unusual sense of this power as opposed to a business where maybe somebody has financial power over you. But in the church, we're talking about a shepherding kind of power, a spiritual kind of power that ends up getting entrusted to certain people. And that really gets to be tricky in some of the relationships.
It's very tricky because a power then is given all of this spiritual and theological language. To the point where many times the person who is at the top becomes untouchable. And I think part of perhaps the larger culture that has led to some of this is that the church today, at least in the United States, has forgotten that Jesus said it's about the kingdom of the heart. It's not a kingdom of externals. And ultimately, any shepherd who is not like the good shepherd and who does not continually point to the good shepherd is a false shepherd.
And I think, you know, Diane, I think this is so well said. And I, in my years in church experience, sometimes it seems like maybe the very people who would be successful wielding power in a business are the same kind of people who wield power in the church. And many times it's a beautiful shepherding. But talk us through what can begin to happen when it's not the shepherding, when there really is this power and these people are protected, and maybe they begin to engage in behaviors that really become destructive.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to understand that power can be used and or abused in many arenas. You know, we often, because of the headlines, go to sexual behavior, which is certainly one of them. But power is also verbal. It's emotional. It's certainly physical. It can be spiritual power, all of those things. And so it's very easy for people to abuse their power in any of those arenas. And frequently, before you get to the big explosion in the headlines in terms of abuse of power in a sexual manner, you have someone who has abused power emotionally and verbally for a long time and who has been protected because of the position. And if we don't protect the person in the position, it will hurt the institution, and it belongs to God, and therefore we can't say anything.
Yeah, it's incredibly well said, and especially when you kind of go through these circumstances and you see that one of the prevailing patterns in each of these circumstances, whether it be a Protestant church or a Catholic church, that people that are in power, maybe there gets to be some rumblings about what might be happening, but they're almost always protected by the people around them that also share some power. Maybe it's the ecclesiastical hierarchy of the Catholic Church. Maybe it's the elder board of a Protestant church. And so there gets to be almost this protective bubble around them.
Yes. Yes, and I think you could probably drop the almost. there does get to be that. And again, it is because we have made the kingdom of God as an external thing. So if our church or our Christian organization or whatever, our institution fails, then we've done damage to the name of God. What we forget is that in Jeremiah, when the temple and the Israelites failed, he basically blew the whole thing up and sent them all over the world, you know, sent them to Babylon. And so he does not sanction institutions that bear his name and do not bear his likeness.
Yeah, it's boy, it's one of those things that kind of sits in the back of my mind from time to time, that at the end of the day, God is incredibly patient and forbearing, but also will not be mocked relative to the future of his kingdom. So these structures do come down when some of these things happen. And so talk about some of the rubble you've seen over the years and how specifically when there has been abuse or there has been really difficult circumstances, what are some first steps that you recommend for people that have had to be exposed to this kind of abuse? How do they begin to walk out of it?
Well, they are often extremely confused about what's happened to them. Many of them, of course, have been blamed by the institution in the process of trying to protect that institution. And because verbal abuse and emotional abuse and spiritual abuse have been used, you know, you can't touch God's anointed. You know, there's all kinds of things that people use to protect the person who is abusive. So the person who's been abused, who either leaves of their own accord or who is booted out because they're the burr under the saddle, is very confused about how to process what's happened. And also when there's been sexual abuse, people are not very schooled in the whole grooming thing, you know, that you do little by little by little, like the frog in the kettle. And so they don't really understand how they've been manipulated into doing things that they're appalled by and have been very damaging to them. So you have to start through the weeds of the confusion, and part of what is helpful there is helping people call things by their right name. Because they have lost, which is something God does. He's truth, right? So they're lost behind the manipulation of language and the spiritualization of things, and they're very cloudy about those things. And so to begin to be very concrete, you know, when someone acts like this to any other human being, it's wrong because God says this. And you watch over time, the confusion begins to lift and the right naming begins to happen. And that's the beginning of the healing and being able to say what the damage was. Because as long as you're confused and can't call things by the right name, you can't even express your damage.
It's Dr. Diane Langberg, who's a clinical psychologist working with members that have been abused by maybe the church structure. And it's some of the troubling headlines that just to break open the box and talk about these things. We're going to take a short break. If you want to join the show, you have a question for Dr. Langberg, you can call or text the studio at 877-93-FAITH. And Diane, when we come back from the break, I would love to get your perspective on some of the stories of hope that maybe you've seen over the years where people have been able to work through this confusion, as difficult as it is, and come out the other side still following Jesus. So more in a moment with Dr. Diane Langberg here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Peter Kapsner and joined in the line by Dr. Diane Langberg. And Diane, again, thanks for coming on the show. These are such difficult headlines, and we sort of see them explode across the newspapers and over the internet. But it can be difficult to know what to do after that. There's all this rubble that's left behind. And so before the break, you talked about just the importance of walking through some of the confusion and naming the right names in this. What other suggestions do you have, or maybe even stories of people that didn't lose their faith and their journey in the kingdom of God, even if a given institution really let them down and really harmed them?
Well, I think finding somebody to walk with you who has knowledge or expertise about things like the abuse of power and the damage that does is very critical. It's very difficult to do it alone, though certainly many people have been left to do it alone and, you know, have done it well. But a companion, whether it's a therapist or somebody like that, I think is very helpful. I certainly have had the privilege of watching many redemptive stories over the years from many kinds of abuse and trauma, not just in the U.S. but around the world. I have often described the work that I do as having a front row seat to redemption. However, redemption, as it did for Christ, is very costly, and it requires death. And part of what dies for people is their understanding of God's church and how it should be, and that, and for many of them, their understanding of God Himself. And so there's often a very difficult season where they're not even sure they want God in their lives. You know, he's been so twisted and misrepresented to them. And it takes a long time to discern that, no, they don't want that God because it is not the true one.
And I just
true one doesn't look like that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we find that sometimes with you know, children that come out of a difficult family background per se. I mean, parents so often represent the face of God to their kids, and I'm sure that's similar kind of work, right? Where the people that are representing the face of God aren't at all representing the one true God.
Yes, it's exactly the same. And what they don't understand for a long time is that they've been taught to believe lies about God, not truth.
Yeah.
And what's been lived in the flesh before them teaches them lies about God. And they're right. They do not want that God because he is not God.
When you talk about
that's a slow process.
Yeah. And you talk about having a front seat to the redemption like that. It's got to be almost miraculous when people's eyes begin to open and they come back to life with the one true God who really does care for us.
Yes, it is miraculous because of the rubble and the damage that's been done. You wouldn't expect little green shoots to start growing out of that, but they do. And part of what it happens on an individual level is they come back to the person of Jesus Christ, which is what the shepherd wasn't. And instead of seeing their faith acted out in the externals of the institution or the programs or the numbers in the pews or whatever else, they become to realize that it's only in the person of Jesus Christ and the kingdom of their heart. That's where our faith really is. And then the life is lived out of that. So it turns everything they've actually believed on its head, and it should.
Hmm. When you think about just sort of some of the abuse that's been perpetrated, what suggestions do you have even from a church structure standpoint? Because I know you talk about how power is concentrated in a single individual, and that is so often a recipe for disaster. How would you suggest that a church might think about organizing itself to at least put some checks and balances here?
Well, that the person at the top is not the man of God. There's only one the man of God.
Yeah.
And that the role of the leadership around that person is to work with themselves and with whoever is in leadership toward transparency, which we've lost. We do cover up, not transparency, and a very deliberate accountability. We give lip service to it, but it's so limp what we do. And so you see stories where, you know, people have had all these things going on in secret, only people knew and did nothing. And so part of the deliberate accountability is that the leadership that supports the leadership has to be accountable to God, not the person in power.
Hmm. There is
allegiance to the person in power, and that's wrong.
And yet it's so tempting, right? You know, and especially when you have a charismatic shepherd that really can draw people in and have gifts for the kingdom when they're not used rightly ordered for that. It does create that havoc on that. Dr. Langberg, do you have a spot or a site where people can go maybe to just sort of get into this further? Maybe they've experienced some of this in their church. Where can they find some resources on this?
If they go to my website, there's a thing there to click called Free Podcasts. I recently did a series on the church's refuge. It's all about power and understanding abuse and what the church ought to look like. There's another one on spiritual abuse and toxic systems. There's all kinds of things there.
Mm. Well, thanks for joining us on Faith Radio Mornings. We just love your perspective, and just so important to recognize just that there is a front row to redemption here, that people really can find hope after just the horrors of these abuse. So have a great rest of your day, Dr. Langberg.
Thank you.
We'll come back and wrap up our show here on Faith Radio Mornings. You know, Logan, part of what drives us here on Faith Radio Mornings each morning is the idea of having some authentic conversations, some real genuine faith, and that there's actually hope. And I think Dr. Langberg really represented that. She was very clear that there's these things that happen in our lives, and yet there's still hope and there's redemption that's possible moving forward. I think it's a great invitation.
Oh my gosh, we're all broken people. I mean, pastors are broken, church committee boards are broken, I'm broken, and if I think that everything is going to be smooth sailing, I'm wrong, and I need to be a part of helping my leaders and the people around me to being accountable for each other.
Yeah, Paul, it's such an important topic again, just the ability to maybe that there still is hope in future.
There is, and you know, after listening to Diane, it's like You know, the church can, there can be a place of abuse, but it also is the place where there can be healing if done right.
Yeah, I think it's so important to not fall into over-skeptical and cynicism, yeah, because there's always hope in the kingdom, and the church does often get it right as well. Thanks for joining us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll catch you in the morning.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.